Hello, welcome to episode 2 of Back to the Source. We are back with you after a fortnight's break from Jurassic Park, and we're ready to dissect another film and compare it to its original source material. So first of all, thanks to everyone that downloaded the first episode. We got a really good response to that, and we had more downloads than people in our immediate family. So it's a sign that we're doing something right, I think. So once again, I'm Tom Barrett, and joining me is...
Michael Rogers.
Hi. So, first things first, Mike.
Yeah.
I just want to review the minutes from last podcast. Couple of things. We got a couple of things wrong.
We did.
Yeah. What does Ian Malcolm do for a living, Mike?
Well, I thought he was a mathematician. But what is he?
He's a chaostician.
There we go.
If I'm even pronouncing that correctly. So despite his efforts to correct everybody in Jurassic Park, we forgot that he is a chaostician. Second one is probably, I'd say, even more unforgivable than the first one. I think that you knew that I was getting this wrong.
I didn't notice at all.
Because I kind of knew. When I said it, I was like, that's not right. But Mike hasn't said anything, so I'll stick with it. And then towards the end, I just didn't mention it anymore. But basically, Mike, who is the owner-operator of Jurassic Park?
John Hammond, isn't it?
It is John Hammond, yeah. And what did I say?
Richard Hammond?
Richard the Hamster Hammond, yeah. So that's an entirely different park.
More of a car park.
Exactly. Whee. That, yeah. just like going off topic a little bit today, right? I sometimes read a website called Geekology, and it's just like random stuffs from the internet. Yeah. There was a story on there today about a millionaire, basically just a guy with far too much money, and he is attempting to build himself a real life Jurassic Park.
Oh goodness!
Yeah.
Oh, has he not learned anything from the book and/or film?
Mike, he learned nothing. We need to send him a link to our first episode. But right, this is the same guy. You know, recently it was like the 100-year anniversary of Titanic.
Yeah.
It's the same guy that wanted to rebuild the Titanic and recreate the journey. So it looks like he's just going for these disaster films. And, I'll give it a go. See if I can do any better.
Give me some of his money. He doesn't need it if he's going to waste it on Jurassic Park and Titanic rebuilding. Come on.
Saying that, though, he is like a five... They said he was a five-time... billionaire, so he has money to waste on stuff like this.
Well, fair enough. Yeah.
And he's been in talks with the Dolly the Sheep people. Okay. So this week we're doing one for the ladies this week.
Yeah.
We are going for the Time Traveler's Wife. Time Traveler's Wife? Time Traveler's Wife. So just a bit of backstory about that. It's a novel written by Audrey Neffenegger, published in 2003 or thereabouts, and a little similar to what we were saying about Jurassic Park last time around. The film rights for the book had already been bought at the time of publication. Bought by Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston through their production company Plan B Entertainment. There was a lot of... Well, we'll get onto that later, actually. I was going to talk about directors and choices that they made, but we'll get onto that in a bit. So just a very brief breakdown of the plot focuses around Henry de Tambell and Claire Absher. Henry is born with a rare genetic disease, i.e. fictional genetic disease, called chronodisplacement, I think.
That's the one.
Yeah, yep. Which means he will sort of, when he gets excited or sort of, it's a little bit like epilepsy. Sometimes he'll just sort of disappear from his timeline and reappear somewhere else. He, by doing this, he meets a woman called Claire Absher. They fall madly in love, and the book and the film both focus on their relationship. So coming into this, I had read the book first and then saw the film. So where do you stand on it?
I hadn't read the book at all. I watched the film twice because I hadn't seen the film either. So I watched it twice. First time just to get an idea of the plot and everything. Second time watching it a bit more with a critical eye. And I found it a bit melodramatic.
Yeah.
A bit over the top, as much as it can be in a film about a time traveler. But it seemed... it seemed like a lot of convenient little points happened, and
yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah,
yeah, it all seemed a bit too convenient at some points, and a lot of characters that I didn't understand why they were there, but we'll get onto that later, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
Well, I mean, I love the book. But I've got to say, it took me a real long time to come around to the idea of reading it, because it was a novel that was around a lot, and it was one of the ones you always saw in the tube, and a lot of people were talking about it. And I think we've discussed this before. I think my first impression of that sort of story, not having known anything other than the title, I think was similar to yours, that I just assumed that it was going to be chick lit and something within that vein, you know. But the book is really far removed from that. It's, you know, it's a real poignant, moving story. It is a work of science fiction, and it asks a lot of you to believe in these things, but it's so rooted in reality, because one of the things the book does so well is it really does portray Claire and Henry's relationship so well, and they feel like a real couple that you could meet. And at times, you know, if you're in a long-term relationship when you're reading it, I think in the book there's a lot that you can identify with there.
Right, yeah, because it seemed a little forced in the film, the relationship. Bit like they were, it didn't seem like they actually fallen in love. It just kind of all seemed like it was just supposed to happen. That was the next point that was supposed to be hit.
Happenstance. It comes back to what you were saying about coincidence. It was just a little bit slapdash. Because in the film, you probably are more au fait with the film than me at the moment, because I've only watched it once recently for this, and that was only the second time I'd ever seen it. But correct me if I'm wrong, but there aren't many scenes in the meadow, are there, with Henry and the young girl?
As a young girl?
Yeah.
Two, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is a huge part of the book, and it's something that the book keeps coming back to, is like Henry knowing her as a child.
Right,
Which, interesting little point, a lot of people have a problem with.
Yeah, you see, my wife said to me that she didn't want to see it because it was about a man seducing a little girl.
Mm.
I was like, really? Really? I don't think Tom would have told me to watch that if that was the case.
Well, you've got to read this book. It's about a paedophile.
I didn't find it at all weird.
But you know, if you go on IMDb, I had a quick look in the forums there, which are always a source of fun. I'd say a good 2/3 of the threads on there were about like, oh, don't watch this film, it's about a paedophile, you know, or this film should be banned, don't let your children watch this film. But the difference is Henry doesn't meet Claire for the first time as a child, and I think that's the big
that's
difference.
The big thing, yeah, because that's what confused me when he met her in the library.
Yes.
That's the first time he meets her, and then only after that point, I think the first time he went back to her in the meadow was on their wedding night, I think.
It could be that, yeah. In the book, he goes to the meadow, as I said, a lot more. He's there a lot. Right. But when he goes back to see her as a child, he's already in love with her as an adult, which I think really changes things. Because, you know, how many times have you wished that you could go and see your wife when she was a child, you know?
I've thought that a lot, yeah.
I think it's just something that you do. Like, when you love someone, you want to know everything about them.
That's it. And you've only got stories people tell you about them when they're younger. Mm. You would like to go and witness it for yourself. I can understand that, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is another sort of way that you make Claire and Henry feel so, Audrey Neffenegger makes them feel so real in the book, because it's just one of those things that you can identify with, and you can think, yeah, no, I'd love the opportunity to do that, you know. Just moving through the film, we noticed their first meet. We've mentioned their first meeting in the library. You know, when they go to the restaurant straight after that.
That's right. Yeah,
I've got to flag this up. This is another instance of my crippling psychological disorder that I appear to be the only one in the world who suffers from.
Tom suffers from a rare disease called pun blindness.
Yeah, I'm completely pun blind. I cannot see puns. It took me you know, bear in mind, I'm a huge Simon Pegg fan, huge Space fan. I loved Shaun of the Dead. It took me at least 4 years to get the reference in the title of Shaun of the Dead.
It never ceases to amaze me.
But it's yet another one I missed in the book because the restaurant's called Bow Tie.
Yeah.
And I just did not get that, like, all the way through the book, because they mention it a few times. I just thought, why is this restaurant called that? It's ridiculous. And then it wasn't until the film that I got it, yeah. The Bow Tie.
Oh, dear. Right, but I've got a few questions for you.
Okay, go for
it. I've got questions. Right. First question.
Yes.
Why is the film and the book called The Time Traveler's Wife?
Good point.
Because from the film, the wife, she seemed like a secondary character. She didn't seem that important. It was all about him, all about Henry. And
yeah,
I couldn't quite grasp why it was called that. Is it told from her perspective in the book, or?
Yeah, it is. In the book, the narrative is sort of equally weighted between Claire and Henry. She's a much sort of more integral part of the plot of the book.
Yeah.
The reason it's called The Time Traveller's Wife, I came across in the research, and Audrey Neffenegger just loved it because it's one title, and as soon as you hear that title, it automatically creates the image of two different people.
Yeah.
It's the time traveller and his wife, and you automatically start thinking about their relationship. And it's true. As soon as you hear that title, you think about what that would be like. And the book really does play on that. And as much as it's about Henry jumping through time and what he has to deal with doing that, it's really heavily focused on Claire being left behind and having to deal with that as well. Which the author wanted to be a metaphor for relationships. And I think there's points where that really comes across. And even in the film as well, there are really strong points where it does feel like a metaphor for a relationship.
Go on.
No, you go.
Oh, I forgot what I was going to say now. What you were saying there about their, them being apart so much, where she's left on her own.
Yeah.
I didn't really get that from the film.
No.
Not personally. I mean, because he's jumping through time and what was it? After they're married, it's got like a little montage of them, like at one point having dinner, and then suddenly he's disappeared and all this sort of stuff. And then the last one, and then she's all annoyed because he's been gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And the thought struck me as, like, you've known he's a time traveler since the age of, what, how old is she in the meadow? Like 9 or something?
Oh, yeah, she's about that, yeah.
And I thought, she must understand that he's going to do that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? Not go, oh, you've been gone 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, I do know what you mean. And in the film, it does feel like it's out of the blue like that. But in the book, because you're hearing it from her perspective, you empathise with her more.
Right.
And I think the difference with Claire is when she meets Henry, he's someone that pops into her life occasionally, and it's sort of understood that he's not always going to be there, but when he's there, it's important and it's special. But then after she actually meets him within his timeline, then she's on the other side of that relationship, and she's expecting and wanting him to be a stable, but he does have to disappear every now and then.
That's a funny one, isn't it? What was I going to say? Does the diary, she has the diary, is that shown in the film? She's got the diary from when she was a kid. Is that used more in the the book? Is it like, I didn't know if there was, because I saw it there and I thought, oh, this might be a calling card back to the book.
Right.
Like, there might be like excerpts from the diary in the book, or I might be off.
You're testing my knowledge now. I don't believe that there are sort of direct excerpts from the diary in the book, but it is referred to more, especially the dates that he is going to visit her. Like Henry knows exactly when he's going to visit her because he's read her diary. So he will know when he turns up and sees her what date it is, and you know what's going to happen that day roughly. You know.
It did make me laugh a little bit in the film where he's gone into a room and he finds a diary and he's flicking through it really quickly, looking for the dates. And she says, what are you doing? You look, reading my diaries. Oh, no, I'm not reading the diary. I just want to know when I go and meet the little girl in the meadow. And he's flicking through it so quick. Like he's like from Johnny number five, flicking through it, trying to learn all the information really quickly. It seems not remembered all them dates. I could only remember two.
I think that is a really good example of what this film does really badly, because it takes this long story and it just crushes it down, and it's like it just hits the main points and leaves out all the bits in between that make it a really good story, you know, because if you take all that sort of weight out, you're just left with something that feels a bit silly, you know, and doesn't quite achieve that suspension of disbelief that the book does, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Well, saying that, where you're saying that they don't do things very well.
Mm.
There was some things that I thought were very obviously taken from the book and not used properly. And I'm talking about characters. I'm talking about characters here, because there's three characters I've written down here that I think were a bigger part. And I want you just to elaborate, if you can, on what their part is in the book. For instance, Gomez.
Yeah,
turns up, they meet at a dinner, he's a bit of a idiot, and then suddenly he's the best man at his wedding, and then we don't see him again until the end.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that he's got a bigger part in the book. So can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, he has a much bigger part in the book, and he's just portrayed so much better in the book, and completely different from in the film as well. He's still Claire's best friend in the book, and he still has that sort of protective nature over her.
Yeah.
But he's also, when I was reading the book, I imagined him as Billy Idol, because he's got that sort of harder edge to him. And,
right.
What they've completely not done in the film with him is, in the book, he's just a pretentious wanker when you first meet him. And he's just, he's one of those people.
Little of that came over, but not much.
Not much, no. But no, I'll give you that. A little bit came through. But he's much better written in the book. And in the film, I felt like they just turned him into the classic chubby best friend character.
Yeah.
You know? But that being said, I really like Ron Livingston, the guy that plays him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's great in Office Space and in Band of Brothers as well. He's a really good actor. But just this wasn't the right part for him, you know?
Right. Next one I've got for you is Dr. Kendrick. Now, this seemed like a completely useless character. Mm. They didn't need to be in the film. He's referenced once, and then Henry goes to see him. And then we don't see him again until Claire, this is a big spoiler, Claire has a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Is it a miscarriage? No, it's not. I take that back. It's not. Miscarriage.
Yeah, it is a miscarriage. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes and sees miscarriage. And then he's not seen again. And then Henry comes back with his legs hurt or something near the end.
Yeah.
Like, see him briefly then. And I for a minute, I thought, who's this bloke she's talking to? It took me a minute, because he had a mustache.
Yeah.
Took me a minute. But yeah. So is he a bigger part in the book? Or is it more important?
I wouldn't say that he was necessarily bigger or more important, but what he does is he puts Henry's disorder out into the world, because by the end of the novel, chronodisplacement has become much more spoken about in the world outside of Henry and Claire. It's it's a known disorder. We're talking about spoilers, you know. By the end of the book, Henry and Claire do manage to have a child who's born with the same disorder. And there's a scene of her like in school, and the teachers all know that she's got this disorder and that she may disappear at a moment's notice and things like that. And that's really what Dr. Kendrick does in the book, is he puts this out there and he becomes this sort of device to I don't know, realise this disorder, you know?
Well, yeah, but even from that, he sounds more developed than he is in the film. He's already, he's got a bit of character, because he's doing something instead of sat behind a desk or going, there, don't worry, you know?
Exactly, yeah. No, he could have entirely been left out of the film and it wouldn't have made a hape of the difference. You know, he was just there to sort of tick a box, I think, in the film. Mm.
The only other one I've got is Henry's dad. Does he play a part? Because
that's a really big part in the book. Yeah,
because as far as I can remember, He goes to Henry goes to get the rings from him, his mother's rings.
Mm.
He's a drunk for all of a sudden, and then he's at the wedding, not drunk.
Yeah.
That's it.
Just, and then like he flicks that.
Out every so often. Just, I think there's one scene just after Alba from the future comes back and speaks to Alba at the present.
Yeah.
And tells dad's going to die. Spoilers, sorry. Oh.
We should just say now, if you haven't already figured this out, we are going to completely ruin this story for you if you haven't already read or watched it. So turn off now. Go on, Mike.
Yeah, so the two girls meet and he tells her that her dad's going to die. I think Claire's washing up. She's figured it out or something. And Henry's dad comes out into the kitchen, puts some dishes down and walks off. Doesn't say a word, if I remember correctly. I was like, what's the point of that? I was waiting for some words of wisdom about Henry's disorder and nothing. Just putting the cake dishes down. That's it.
just bringing these dishes in.
Bye.
In the book, that's a much bigger part. And like his Henry's relationship to his dad as well is also like much more important in the book. Because there's a really nice dynamic between Henry and his parents, because Henry's mum dies when Henry's still very young. And that's the first time he discovers that he has this disorder. And then Henry, all through his life, will at certain points go back and visit his mother, which is in the film as well. But it's really just that bit on the
once.
On the subway, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, in the books, you get to see that a lot. And, you know, I think he references it in the film, but you don't actually see it. He says, like, he sees them when his parents were happy and he sees them walking with him as a baby in the pram and things like that. And there's little bits, like, I believe there's a section where Henry's dad believes that the future Henry is having an affair with Henry's mother, because it's this sort of figure that will sort of lurk outside the house looking in. And it's not till later that he actually discovers that it's his son in the future.
Oh, that's cool.
Can I, as I said, you are much better aware of this film than me at the moment, but there is not a scene in the film, is there, where Henry's dad walks in on Henry as a teenager?
No, it literally jumps from him that's been 6 or 7 or whatever, where he's very young, where his mum dies, jumps straight to him in his, I'm guessing, his 20s.
Yes, where he's working in the library.
That's it, yeah. So jump. Go because on.
There's a scene where Henry's dad walks into Henry's bedroom as an adolescent and he's in there having sex with himself.
What, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you having me on?
I've not made that up, which actually brings up a really old argument between the two of us.
Yeah.
Which is, if you had a clone of yourself, not had, if there was a clone of yourself, would you make use of that situation?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I wouldn't like myself looking back at me.
But I've always said that I wouldn't have a problem with it if there was like if it was actually another me there, then that'd be fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just a little worried I wouldn't get on with myself.
Oh no, Mike's here again.
Yeah, that's the worry.
You know, Henry clearly doesn't have a problem with it, and at 15 or 16, you know, who would?
Yeah, good point.
But, you know, there's little bits like that.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, this was a thing, because I'm sure she's going to listen to this and going to hate me for it, but my wife's not that bright sometimes.
Oh, Mike, no. Come on. She's very intelligent.
No, she's very intelligent, but she's got no common sense.
I'll give you that, yeah.
And she did struggle a bit with the jumping about with the time.
Okay.
When Henry was going back and forth. And I think it's because there's no clear indication of what era it's supposed to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, that's something that I wouldn't really be able to comment on, because in the book, obviously, it's very clear. And then watching the film, because I'd read the book, I could just figure it out, you know?
But everyone seems to be wearing the same sort of clothes.
Yeah.
There's no difference, you know, if it was the 90s to the 2000s. you would see a noticeable difference, but it's no real deal. That was something that she struggled with, and I think other people might as well, because it's not made. There's no clear indication. I think it was a scene where he bumps into Gomez. He's having a fight, and And to be fair, I was struggling a bit with that. I was like, is that him now, or is that him in the future, or is it? Blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing. The haircut, that was just ridiculous, because it's like, I look older, don't I? I was like, no, you don't.
Yeah, they could have done with a bit more makeup on him, I think.
Yeah.
That would have definitely helped that as well. It would have definitely helped you sort of automatically knowing where he was, because I think they could do the job by having a little bit of stubble and some grey hair. But that's not enough. You know, that's not enough to distinguish between a late 20s-year-old Henry and an early 40s Henry, you know.
Yeah, no, not enough.
And, you know, there's no excuse for that. This was Brad Pitt's production company. He could have just gone, "Oi, lads, you lads from Benjamin Button, come over here.
Come here, sort this out, would
you?" got a job for you. This is Eric Banner.
this was another thing, because they mentioned it briefly, and I would have liked more information, really. What causes him to time travel? Because at one point they go into, when they got the lottery ticket, they go into a place with a load of tellies.
Oh,
and
she
suddenly shouts out, "Oh no, tellies set you off." I was like, what? When? There are things like that, more like described in the book.
Not really, no.
just made up, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, the chrono displacement, it is a little bit magical. It's just something that's there and it's not really explained. But I think it is. I think it does seem to have a lot in common with autopsy? With epilepsy. That's the word I'm looking for. Jesus. Wow. yeah, a lot in common with epilepsy.
Yeah.
Because alcohol sets him off as well, and TVs and things.
Yeah, that's right. That was another thing that I don't think was done very well, because it was, she meets him and says, "You shouldn't drink, that sets you off." And then suddenly doesn't drink again.
Well, not doing that anymore.
Doing that anymore, I got laid.
Yeah, and didn't he just. That's another thing, right? In the book, there's so much written about their sex life, and like Henry is described as this nymphomaniac, because it's the only thing that grounds him. So those two are just constantly at it the whole way through the book. But, you know, not in the film, unfortunately.
Here's a thing I want to talk about.
Go on.
Alba.
Yes.
Her daughter. Now, a thought occurred to me when watching this.
Yeah.
Whenever Henry sees her, she's 9 or 10. Now, the first scene of him time traveling, he meets himself at the age of about 30.
As a young boy, you mean?
Yeah, as a young boy. Yeah. Young boy just got out of the car crash, and then this man runs over and says, "I'm you from the future. Don't worry, it will be okay." Alba never comes back as an older woman.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems a bit odd. I thought and she says she can control when she can time travel to a point. So wouldn't you think at a certain point you'd be like, "Oh, I want to see my dad again," and go back, and because she can't now, so she wants to. I would want to do that. Say I got to my 40s or something, I think, "Oh, maybe I'll go back and see dad."
Yeah. No, you are right, and that's not something that's addressed in either of them, is it?
So my theory is he died aged 10.
What a charming theory.
I know. Lovely, wasn't it?
You could be. See, I was brewing a little theory there, and I thought maybe that she gets to a certain age and they cure it, which is slightly
or that,
nice.
I thought that.
Child of miracle marvel. Who knows? Medical marvel. I can't talk tonight. did acting at university. I've got a few little notes here. I want to pull this up, right? Because there's, oh my God, there's one section of the film that is just so badly handled. It's unbelievable. Cool. You know, when they get married and she goes to, he goes to Claire's parents' house and meets her dad and all that.
Yeah.
It's just so clunky. I mean,
it's a bit terrible.
the first time you saw this film, you wouldn't have known what's coming, obviously.
But yeah.
The second time around, did you pick up on just how badly handled that dinner table scene is?
Yeah, what with the dad?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit... They left the camera on him for far too long.
Mm.
Like, looked kind of ominous. Like, plot point.
Yeah, yeah. I may kill you. But it's also, the dialogue is ridiculous. Like, there's one scene where, do you ever hunt, Henry? I can't say I have. Well, maybe I should take you out sometime.
Yeah. What was that? It's normally me who's being chased.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that mean? If someone said that to you, what would you... You're like, why? Are you a criminal?
Yeah, if someone who is marrying your daughter said that to you.
Oh, that would freak me out. I would cancel the wedding.
But then he also says, the dad just says, well, you know what they say? Life's a hunt. Who says that? Who says that?
Know. Who says that? I don't know.
Lazy.
I change a letter, but that's just me.
You know, the one of the people that worked on the script for this was the person who wrote Ghost.
Mm.
Which kind of makes sense to me.
It's, yeah.
You know, it's a science fiction supernatural love story. I can kind of see that. But I do think the script in this is one of the things that could have been done a lot better.
Mm. Yeah. It was a bit clunky in places, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, just to go back to characters as well, there's a couple of things... There's a couple of characters that they missed out completely.
That's nice, yeah. Go on.
Well, there's one character in particular, because Henry takes a lot of sort of... it's not prescription medicine, because he doesn't have a prescription for it, but it's medicine that he obtains illegally to try and control his condition.
Yeah.
And he has like a drug dealer that he'll go and see to get this medicine from him. And the drug dealer, he dies in the book because they're friends as well.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And the guy dies because one of his boyfriends gives him AIDS. And it's like
a
very sad death.
Gosh, cheery, this book, isn't it?
It is really down in places. But that whole section, they left out, and they left out some other things as well that sort of... They give Henry's disorder more of a... It feels more like a curse in the book, because there's things like this, like his friend dying and he can do nothing about it, like his mum dying and he can do nothing about it, like him dying and he can do nothing about it. You know,
yeah.
And multiple
miscarriages that you can't do anything about.
Exactly, yeah. And even when he tries to, his past self comes and like buggers it all up for him.
That's the point. Is that cheating?
Well, this this is an interesting point, isn't it? Because technically it's not, but it's a little bit like what we were saying about, would you sleep with your clone?
Your clone, yeah. Yeah, it is. Now, I would think, personally, I think it a little bit is, because I can say I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm a completely different person. So it would feel like cheating if my wife was suddenly sleeping with a younger version of me. Because she wants that instead of what I am now.
You know what? Yeah, that I could see that. And also it leads into another point about this being like a metaphor. Because this didn't strike me until actually watching the film recently. When she walks down the aisle and marries him, she's marrying him in the future.
Yeah.
And that, to me, just felt like such a metaphor. Because that's what she wants. You know, she loves Henry. But at that point in time, he's not really there
yet. Who she remembers.
Exactly,
yeah, yeah.
Which I think is just men, do you know what I mean? Women are very, you know, they know what they're doing with their lives, and men I think are just always boys, and there's a bit in the middle where we pretend not to be, you know.
Yeah.
But she wants that guy in the future. She's marrying him, and then but she knows, she trusts that eventually he'll get there, you know.
Yeah. I would have been so annoyed if I'd missed my wedding and known I'd had to wait what, 20 years to experience it? How horrible must that feel?
It's great that you're actually putting yourself through these questions, because they're not ones that many people have to face in real life. It's Henry de Tamble and Dr. Manhattan. You know, they're the only two, really.
Oh, dear.
But again, that wedding scene, and that whole wedding where he disappears and the older Henry turns up, I mean, in the book, it gets away with it. And it is a little bit of light relief in the middle of the book, you know. But in the film, because the whole film is just so, I think, I've got to say, ill thought out, that wedding scene just feels like, it's like a 60s like sitcom, you know.
Yeah.
The time traveler's wife. Where's Henry gone? Uh-oh.
And the bad dialogue as well. The dad just going, he's got grey hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And
and also, this is ridiculous. He says, because Henry's disappears, Gomez is in the room, Claire's sister knocks on the door. You guys all right? Yeah, we're fine. We just need about half an hour or so, right? Yeah. Okay, so he's set that up. He's got half an hour. Old Henry walks in, and Gomez is like, right, you don't have time to shave.
Yeah, no, because he changes his mind, goes 5 minutes.
Oh, did you yeah. All right.
Goes, give us about half an hour. Which I would have stuck with if I saw him come through. It was like, yeah. Right, we'll get the boot polish in your hair or something. Get the grey out. Get you to shave. But no, he just goes, 5 minutes.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that section. Did not like that. What else have I got?
Both in the book as well? Did you not like that? Did you not like that section in the book?
No, in the book, I forgive it in the book because... Like I said, it's a bit of light relief in the middle of the film, and it is a bit silly and a bit sort of like comedy, but you can go with it in the book because you know that everything else in the book is so sad, you know, apart from certain really nice bits.
Yeah.
Just consulting my notes, wondering what else I've got here.
What have you got there, Tom?
I'd just like to go back to the thing about how real that couple feel in the film, because there's just lovely little bits where you get to see them as a couple and it feels so just instantly identifiable. Like there's a scene where they're staying at Claire's parents' house because Claire's parents are like really, really important in the books and they go there a lot. And Henry and Claire go to a party and they get talking to a younger couple about music and like they're sharing their taste in music. And you know,
book, yeah.
This is in the book. Yeah. And like Henry and Claire really have this really great grounded relationship in the books that feels real, where they have these things where they go and they share interests in music and they argue with that. And Claire is such a better character in the book because she's less of a drip and she does really good things for Henry that don't come across in the film. Like she goes to great lengths to find him like a copy of his mum singing, a recorded copy of it.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's gorgeous little things like that that just... they're not in the film. And like I said before, by pulling out all those little bits...
substituted for the more melodramatic bits and given weight to that, all the really depressing bits,
yeah.
They're given more weight and you've not got any of the little bits that add to it. I mean, to be fair, the first time I watched it, I did get a little teary in a couple of places.
Oh, I cried at it, but...
Yeah, yeah.
That's like getting student stoned. I'll cry at anything. I've forgotten my train of thought. But no, melodramatic is something that came up again and again in the reviews of this film.
Yeah.
Because it is that, you know, they've made it less than the sum of its parts, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think as well, it didn't have to be like this. I don't know, you might disagree with me, but this, I mean, it's a tough job. This book is a tough adaptation because it's this big sci-fi idea and you're trying to do something so different with it, you know? I mean, do you think it could have been better done in someone else's hands, knowing what you did with the book?
Yeah, I think it could have been. I think you could have easily put an extra 20 minutes on there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Still enjoyed the film because I was enjoying it up till the end, even at the end, and I thought I could do with a little bit more here. And I think if you'd added another 10-20 minutes, something like that, and just put in those little bits where you see the couple together, and it would help. It would make so much more of the stuff that goes wrong, which they put all the focus on, you'd feel more for them, I think, in that case. But
yeah, no, you're right. I think make it less about the time travel and more about their relationship.
Mm.
Yeah, make it about a couple that have hard times but stick with each other and love each other through that. Make it about that and just have the time travel as just something else in there, you know? But interestingly enough, Robert, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. I think it's Schwenke or Schwenker was the director.
That's a rude word, Tom.
I think it's a German word.
All right.
I pronounced it wrong. Email in, Robert, if you're listening. Tell me how to pronounce your name. He was not the first director to express interest in this. Okay, before him, Steven Spielberg and David Fincher had both sort of said, "Oh, I'd quite like to have a crack at that."
Yeah.
Spielberg, I think, could have had a really good go at it, but I think David Fincher could have really done this justice.
Yeah, I think so. I think Spielberg would focus more on the sci-fi bit.
Yeah, probably.
Probably a bit more, but yeah, I think Fincher would be the one, yeah.
But it just feels like, you know, I'm not saying that Plan B Entertainment did this, but it feels like a producer along the line just said, right, that book sold 2.5 million copies, let's sell those 2.5 million people a cinema ticket, because it feels like a cash-in film. They've just taken they've shook the book. And the main bits that have fallen out, they've thrown into a film, and they've got a director of hire to come in and like keep charge of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Keep costs down. You're not going to have to pay Spielberg prices, are you, then?
Get it taken out.
That is one of the things that annoys me about adaptations that get done like that. Is give it to someone who wants to do it. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
They'll do a better job of it. It'll be a labour of love then, rather than making some money, which
but you know, it was I think probably, I don't know, but I think probably productions like this, they're doomed from the start, because it depends who buys those rights and why they're buying them. And the book was a hard sell to begin with anyway, so, and because the rights had already been bought before the publication, it didn't have time to get out there and be appreciated and be loved. It just got sold on its title, and you know, the synopsis, and somebody obviously just grabbed that up without, you know, giving too much thought to the book, I think.
What do you think of the casting? Do you think it, from reading the book, are those the people who are cast, are they the ones that fit the role best? Or
I really think that there's very few people in the film that have been cast well. Eric Banner, I think, is not a bad choice for Henry. Looks wise, he's sort of got it. Like, Henry's described as sort of dark and messy and very attractive and slender.
Yeah.
And Eric Banner fits that. But there's something about his nature that doesn't quite get Henry, because Henry's meant to be this like really intelligent guy, really clever. And also he's like a bit of a bruiser as well. You know, he's like, he's a woman's ideal man. He can read your poetry and then kick the shit out of your ex-boyfriend. But apart from him, I think the rest, like Rachel McAdams, Claire, she didn't really make sense to me.
No.
And another thing, like the book, she's described all the way through as having this bright red hair, you know, really rich red hair.
They dyed her hair red. You can tell they've dyed it red.
But even then, it's not really red, you know. Like when you see her as a kid, she's got this like amazing red hair.
Oh, that, that kid is creepy from the beginning, because I think from the all the meadow scenes with her, they put this bright red lipstick on her, and and in some scenes she hasn't got it, and it's really distracting. I found that really distracting. Anyway,
her eyes are just a little bit too far apart. So.
Look, yeah,
I spend a lot of time picking on children in this show. There's one scene in the book as well that isn't even referenced in the film, in the meadow. And it sort of, it says a lot about their relationship and about Claire and Henry's personalities as well. When Claire is sort of getting on for 16, she sort of gets into a sticky situation with a guy in her town.
All right.
I really should have looked into this a bit more thoroughly, but I don't, she's not sort of exactly raped, but I think the guy sort of was, you know, she was put into a bad situation with this guy.
Right.
So then Henry comes back as a 40-year-old, and they go and kidnap this kid, tie him to a tree naked, and sort of beat the shit out of him.
Well, that's more like an extreme version of Uncle Buck.
Yeah. Oh, Uncle Buck. We should see if that's based on a book, and if it isn't, we should say it is. but again, there's that, you know, things like that. They've in the book, they belong in the book, but you can't look at The Time Traveler's Wife as a film and think, you know what, there could easily be a torture scene slipped into here. You know?
That's just what I needed, just on top.
That would have helped. I think I've got through my notes. Oh, I've got one last point, Mike. Didn't occur to me until I'd started looking at this film with the view to talking about it with you. But did you see a little connection here between what you view as the most romantic period, the most romantic moment in cinema?
No. What are you I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
Mike has always held that the most romantic thing he's ever seen in a film is I came through time for you, Sarah.
That's the best pick-up line. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have tried that when I was a bit younger.
There's a little bit of Kyle Reese in Henry DeTemple. Oh. But not so much of Sarah Connor in Claire Upshaw.
No.
To her detriment. Yeah, I've done my notes. How about you?
Yeah. I've got one last point, actually.
Go for it.
The way time travel is portrayed in this, is that how you think time, if time travel was possible, is that how you would see it going?
That's a very good point. Well, just to go back to Terminator, we are going with the Terminator style of time travel in...
Okay, yeah, that's your reference.
He goes, no clothes, he just sort of turns up there. I don't know, man. I've never really... I always think that time travel could be done with magnets. I always think there's a way you could do it with magnets. But, I mean, in my head, if I was to invent a time machine, it would be more like a box that I would walk into and there'd be like a magic door and I'd come out on the other side in the past. I'd like to think that you don't have to time travel naked. I wouldn't be doing that a lot.
No. But also, do you think that's how time travel works? Like, I mean... where in The Time Traveler's Wife, it's if you've it's already happened. If you've gone,
I see what you mean. Like determinism, yeah. I don't know, man. It's a real. We could talk for at least another 5 hours on this subject. You know what I believe, right?
That always appeals to me more. That if it's possible, it's already happened and someone's already come back and.
But then that throws up so many questions, doesn't it? Because then if you're saying that whatever is going to happen has happened, then doesn't that sort of imply that there is some sort of plan or order to things?
Yeah, and that's a scary bit. That's the bit that scares me.
Yeah, because where does that come from then? And, you know, who writes that plan? Or there's a really good theory called block time. Which I put up on our, I think I put it on our Twitter, Block Time, which is that every moment of time is existing simultaneously, which if you kind of go with that, it does away with this idea of there being a plan, because it's not a stream, it's not a path, it's just everything's happening at once, you know, and Block Time is roughly, as John Lloyd described it, time is like a landscape, and just because you're not in New York doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And the same is true of last Wednesday. You know, all these things are happening at the same time. And then if time is like that, then maybe it's simpler and at the same time more messy to just walk between the points, you know?
That's an interesting one. I like that.
But
not like Back to the Future then?
Well, see, Back to the Future, if we're talking about like... time travel. I was going to say fictional time travel, but then all time travel is fictional at the moment. Back to the Future is probably closest to how I would like to see time travel, because I really like the many worlds theory. And I think that in an infinite universe, there are infinite possibilities, so that anything can happen somewhere, you know. And I think that time travel can get sort of tied up with that, because... you know, when you go back and change something, maybe it doesn't change your timeline, but maybe it creates a branch and then there's another universe happening where all these things are different. It's an odd one.
It's an odd one.
It's a great subject. Did we, Mike? We should do another podcast just about time travel.
Yeah, but you talking for 5 hours, that's it.
Yeah, and you just going, oh. Cool. Well, that was the Time Traveller's Wife, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Oh, last question, Tom. Last question.
Shoot.
Which is better?
Oh, the book.
The book's the better one. Okay.
Yeah.
You heard it first. The book is better.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Yeah, go and read the book. If you've seen the film and haven't read the book, just forget everything you saw and give it a go. Because I didn't think I'd like the book. I thought it would be Mills and Boone meets Doctor Who, but I was so wrong about that. And I really loved that. If you haven't read the book and you haven't seen the film and you've listened to this point, just don't bother. There's no point now.
Oh,
okay, well, I enjoyed myself. You?
Too. Me too.
Awesome.
I want everyone who's listened to this, I encourage them to go and like us on Facebook.
Yes, please. Yeah.
I want to hear any comments that you've got on our show and any mistakes we may have made.
And, yeah, I'm sure there'll be a few.
Yeah, and any requests for future podcasts.
Yeah, do it. And email us as well. Our email address is backtothesourcepodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch. Anything, just say hello. And also, if anybody wants to send me a headset with a microphone in it, please do, because I've gone out. I'm recording this on my iPhone at the moment, which is sort of jerry-rigged into my laptop, because I keep going and buying headsets with a microphone in, and none of them flipping work. Creative.
he's going to have a rant.
I'm just going to say, no one buy. I'm putting inside the box. A Creative HS420 headset, because I'm on my second one and the microphone doesn't work on any.
Oh, lost a sponsor now, Tom. Thanks
fuck
for that.
Fuck. That was the first swear word of the podcast.
No, you said shit earlier on.
12A. Cool. Yeah, and next time we will be back. And what are we doing next time, Mike? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't. What are we doing next time?
I don't know
because we planned three ahead. I can't remember which one it is.
We'll be doing Wes Anderson's adaptation of Roald Dahl's book Fantastic Mr. Fox. So we're going yet again in a completely different direction.
Hey. Awesome. We've done one for the guys, one for the ladies, now one for the kids.
I wonder what happened. I wonder what kids I'll have a go at next week. Great. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.